Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. I have waited for centuries in secrecy and shadows for the return of my beloved. She is here, in this place, and I must know her, protect her, love her. The Winston-Salem Festival Ballet brings the classic story of Dracula to life, but with a modern twist. The new ballet by founder and artistic director Gary Taylor, with original music by UNCSA film music composition head Chris Heckman, is told from the viewpoint of the Count himself. Dracula runs Friday, October 4th through Sunday the 6th, with evening performances at 8 and Sunday matinee at 2 in Hanesbrands Theater. Composer Chris Heckman has collaborated with Danny Elfman, and his recent credits include the acclaimed video game Red Dead Redemption and the award-winning short film The Perfect Gentleman. Gary Taylor's ballet Temptation received national recognition, winning the prestigious Regional Dance America National Choreographic Commission Award. Dracula, but not just any Dracula. This is told from the viewpoint of Dracula himself. And Gary, how did you come up with the concept? And tell me about some of the research you've done putting this together.
Well, I've seen a lot of Draculas. And I think first, I really wanted to tell something different. You know, it is a classic story told so many ways, and I don't think anybody has ever told it from his perspective. I mean, they might have touched upon certain things as a human being. I think with Bram Stoker's, I think some of the portrayal, even when like the movie, they touch upon that this is a person. But no one has really, I think with Hollywood and trying to sell tickets, you know, we're trying to really either create a horror flick or create the beast or scare people. And so everyone's taking that approach, especially around Halloween. You know, even all the ballets that are out there, you know, gory, you know, as a beast. And I really wanted to, I guess, portray Dracula as the person that he was.
One of the folks that did a pretty good job of that in the written sphere, I thought, was Anne Rice and the Vampire Lestat, that whole series. Did you check out any of those books?
I didn't. You know, I'm really I like when I do something, I have to be careful how much I absorb, because then it clouds my perspective and I start gearing my work towards what they did. And so to keep a fresh approach, I like to keep my mind fresh on it, so I can do it.
I think that goes for music as well, the same thing. My first approach was to listen to what other Draculas there were that existed, and then to immediately remove that from, to know what the history is and then absolve that so that you can approach it in a unique way.
As an artist, that's the way I create, so fresh and on the spot like that, that I don't want that influence of something that, even though it's not in the forefront, if it sits back there, it could have a huge impact. And so I try to remove myself from that completely.
Yeah. But from your fresh perspective then on Dracula, and we'll be looking at his life through his eyes in a sense, what are some things that came to you?
Number one, love. You know, his romance with Mina, and also his approach on his abductions and things like that. I wanted to make sure that it could be viewed from, I think, from about anybody and as far as ages, and have an open perspective. And with that, I think when I started looking at that, I really started listening to the scores that had a beautiful flow to them. And so when I was introduced, I think Monica Wilmont, actually.
Violinist with the Winston-Salem Symphony and the Greensboro Symphony, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. And she's also played in our lobby and played for us live at some of our performances. Had mentioned to my wife about Chris, and she knew the story and the approach that I'd taken, and I was looking for someone to do an original score for it. So Chris and I met, and I heard some of his things, and some of his, I guess, idols were my idols, Danny Elfman and people like that. And I'm very much moved with movie scores, and I have a great classical mental background as far as where I drew from.
You were a classical trombonist?
Yes, I was, yes. And so I had a great array, and I just knew, as I had to approach it in a way of the spectator's point of view, a dancer's point of view, and trying to make the ballet accessible and also, I think, moving. When we started working together last year and started pulling the score together as we were doing the rehearsals, I was watching something come to life even more so than I could imagine just by adding Chris's music to it. That was magical. And the dancers who that year had done the same roles the year before, and I had almost the same cast, I just had a few new members, really felt this transformation, and I saw in their faces, they saw in my face, when we started working in that studio with the choreography, with the new score. I think Chris captured the ability for it to truly come to life.
It's a nice canvas to approach, I would think, from a composer standpoint, just the theme and approaching it with dance. It's this kind of blank, sonically speaking, canvas.
It's funny how it's so similar to a film, because actually what Gary gave me was the performance from the previous year with the classical music that he was using and some film selections from film music.
A temp track.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a temp track that I had to, again, kind of familiarize and then get rid of, you know, so I approached it fresh. But I basically scored the thing because I was matching movements. I had to map the tempo exactly, you know, so that Gary didn't have to change the choreography very much.
How do you go about that, Chris, without making it Mickey Mouse? In other words, you know, where you're hitting there, hitting there, hitting there. How do you find that balance point?
Well, nothing about the hits are really over the top, you know, and the score is very cinematic in nature, and the things that are quote-unquote hits are more swells and sweeps and things that sort of catch lifts or catch kicks in the air or things like that. Uh-huh. So in some sense, I suppose it is a Mickey Mouse, but when I hear that term, I think more to something that's a little more silly, and this catches the breadth of the motion more than the actual hitting of the movement.
I think the phrasing. The phrasing was the key. It caught the phrasing, the way it emoted into the mood of the feeling, whether it was romantic, whether it was an attack, whether it was, you know, sweet, whether it was innocent. I think that's what I think Chris really captured.
Well, it's a unique opportunity to have a compelling score and the film scorer in our presence. And maybe between the two of you, you could talk us up to one of these scenes in the course of Dracula. What's a favorite of yours, Gary, just from the, you know, the pairing of the music with your choreography?
Well, I have a slang word for, I guess, the first dynamic dance in the second act, which is the vamp dance. And that's one of those ones I think all the dancers in the cast, whether they're or not, want to do it, not just because of the choreography. I mean, it's very dynamic, but also because of Chris's music added to it. It's just, it really, in a sense, rocks.
I
think it rocks.
I think it rocks as much as an orchestra can rock.
Sure. Yeah.
well, what are we going to be hearing here orchestration-wise?
Orchestration-wise, pretty heavy full string section, very large brass section. Only is women's choir, because that represents the vampires much more. They're all vampiruses, you know, so, or vamps as we call them.
Okay, well, let's hear. This is a vamp dance from Dracula, music by Chris Heckman. That is some really powerful stuff and completely convincing that I'm listening to an orchestra, but we're not listening to an orchestra. What are we hearing?
We're hearing many different collections of sample libraries, which are essentially little pieces of recorded instruments, most of which are recorded from various Hollywood orchestras in order to get that cinematic sound. And they're all reassembled in various programs to create a more realistic sound for what we call a mock-up.
And to get that, you might sample an oboe playing a note and then, or several notes, and then spread that out through the whole range of the instrument?
Yes, basically sample every note played every way you can imagine and every transition in between any of those notes, and then you've got yourself a sample library.
And then Chris can pull them up on his keyboard and use them as needed. That's great. I love the Sforzando attack of that brass, and that's exciting stuff. Well, how about another one? You've whetted my appetite for blood. No. For more music, how about a favorite scene of yours, Chris, where the music really came together in a way that you're really proud of?
I think my favorite scene is the abduction of Mina by the newly vampirized Lucy, who comes in shortly after this scene that you just heard. It starts off a little bit less aggressive as the vampires are enticing Jonathan away, so it's a little bit of a magical floaty moment, and then the aggression starts where the vamps come in, and then the attack begins on Mina, and they eventually carry her off the stage, kicking and screaming.
I don't have the advantage of having seen the ballet, but what sorts of movements would you say describe our hero, or our center focus, Dracula, and then some of the other participants in the ballet?
Well, I think with Dracula, I mean, he's a romantic character in this ballet. And so use of a, you know, big sweeping cape is very important, and the way it's weighted. We worked a lot on getting the right kind. And, you know, that actually helps with, I think, some of the special effects that we do, where he appears and disappears and things like that. And then for the vamps, for the female vampires in the show, I think torn and tattered, but very energetic and distorted. In a sense, not literally, but, you know, hungry for blood, ready to abduct their next victim. There's no blood. I hate to disappoint, but there's no blood in the ballet. It would have taken a completely different turn if I would have taken it that way, but it doesn't. Yeah. So,
just the whole concept of Dracula in love is a concept that, I mean, for most, it's usually Dracula lust, but you've replaced it with love, and it's a whole new take on the man.
That also represents the main theme of Dracula. It's sort of a cyclic theme where it never really is able to progress. So it's sort of representative of his endless search for his, you know, long lost love, and yet never being able to completely fulfill that desire and need. But that's completely romanticized in the music as well, and that's pretty much the core of the score, I think.
UNCSA Film Music Composition Head Chris Heckman and Winston-Salem Festival Ballet Founder and Artistic Director Gary Taylor. See the world through the eyes of Dracula as he searches and finds his one and only love during the Festival Ballet's production of Dracula. It opens Friday, October 4th, and will run through Sunday the 6th with evening performances at 8 and a Sunday matinee at 2 in Haynes Brands Theater in Winston-Salem. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. We're exploring the dark side today on the show, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. First, we'll stay nocturnal with our music guide, pianist Pamela Howland, in a captivating exploration of the nocturne. Nobody wrote him better than Chopin, and that's right up Pam's alley. Pam's hubby, artist Wendell Myers, has been taking notes with paintbrush and easel, and they're both here to share. Film scholar Mary Dalton has saved us an aisle seat at our first ever film segment on Triad Arts Weekend. We call it Behind the Scenes, and Mary takes us there next when Triad Arts Weekend continues.